go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here, about 2 minutes past the hour, a little bit late getting started, just because of the switchover between Dr. Bill's file and my file, and things like that have to happen. Sometimes forget to throw the 973rd switch, but I think I've got them all thrown this time. Do I? Chat room, I hope, will let me know. I think I got all the switches thrown. My apologies for yesterday, but it was a holiday long weekend. And, well, we got a chance to go and be neighborly. Got a chance to go to a cookout held by some neighbors of ours. We had a lovely, lovely time and didn't get home until, well, a good bit past showtime. So your indulgence, all I can do is pray your indulgence. But we've got 4 good solid days of broadcasting this week. Agnes and I had talked about heading over to see our little kindergartner graduate, but she just told me that plan had been nixed so that we can get 4 good solid days of broadcasting in today. A little program note, I'll be headed to D.C. for more work on the ACAC, ACHEACT.org, ACAC.org. Come Sunday, so there may be some broadcast interruptions, but I'll try to let Agnes know so she can put up a post. I'll tweet, Facebook, you know, the usual stuff for letting you know what's going to happen when. But 4 solid days of broadcasting here, and I'm looking forward to it. Of course, we used part of the Memorial Day weekend to go and do a remembrance of, among others, the uncle I never met, who never came home, whose portrait hangs on our wall. We remember him a lot more than just Memorial Day, but we remember him on Memorial Day especially. I'm sure many of you did something similar. So, let's see. We got the... another program note. Also, on Saturday, you know, we've been listening to Dr. Bill now with the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays here on the Horn. He and Keith Lilly will be doing one of their video versions, video American History Chat, this on the foreign policy course that's being offered through PRISM, PRISMWV. That is Saturday at 3 p.m., this Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, noon Pacific Daylight Time, and, I'll leave sorting out the other time zones to the rest of y'all for whom it is particularly relevant. I haven't memorized them all yet. I do have them on my phone so I can know what it is when it is, but I don't have my phone sitting in front of me. But that will be coming around on Saturday. I encourage you to tune in. You can go to Ustream.tv and just look up PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, and American History Chat, and you'll find the video there. I think we've had some, and I need to talk to John Fox about this. There's been a widget problem with the player on the PRISMWV.org stream. Ordinarily, you can just go there because we've got a chat room just like the Horn chat room, and we've got a live player for the video streams there, but it hasn't been working lately. That's PrismWV.org. I'll tweet it and Facebook it if it should happen to get sorted out. Let's see. So we've got enough to material for two shows tonight. There was some sort of a 713 million Moran pileup over the weekend. We're still sorting them out. But sort we will attempt to do. And a little reminder, of course, the horn is made possible by you, by individuals like you who all through during each and every month contribute to keep this all on the air. With this being the last week of May, I checked to see what our status is, and, well, the way it works out, if between now and the end of May, which would actually be, he said, clicking on the calendar, I mentioned lately how much I hate Windows 8. Yeah, May will end on the 31st, Friday of this week. If we, between now and the 31st, can raise about $700, we will be even both for the end of May and for the $300 shortfall we had in April. We will, in other words, be something approaching caught up, and I will go into an absolute frenzy of bill paying. Right now I've got a little hat that's just collecting them until, right. So that's where fundraising stands. That means it would work out to a little more than our usual $150 a night, but whatever is more than, we are more than thankful, more than appreciative of your kind gifts that keep this all going. Sadly, we can't offer you a sweaty prayer cloth or tell you that your place in the is assured in the firmament. The only thing that we can tell you that happens as a result of your contribution to the horn is that the horn itself continues. So I hope that that will be sufficient inducement. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional carbon-intensive overland through the air snail. Well, no snails involved now. Mail address, that one being the horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And thanks to one and all who make the who keep the mailbox from being an echo, and thanks to you who contribute via PayPal. A note in this evening from Darlene. She says, "You know the drill, so the horn can continue. $100 challenge for this evening." This just literally came in 0 minutes ago, according to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Thank you very much, Darlene. Darlene has $100 that would like to have 100 friends. And if the 100 friends show up, be it 5 at 20, 10 at 10, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 3 at $33.33, but I know that works out to $99.99. However you want it to happen, Darlene will match it so that this will be a $200 evening and will get us significantly closer to ending May, up out of April's ditch. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you profoundly. All right. This almost seems unfair. Where do we go? Listen, where I want to start, if it's okay with you, I want to start with some of the high-minded stuff that Dr. Bill was talking about, because he makes it so accessible. You know, he was Dr. John sent me the story, and it was from Alternet, about the move to recognize the theft of lands of Native peoples here, and the big event that will take place in August with a massive flotilla of canoes going down the Hudson River to New York City. It should be something to behold. And then in that story, it mentioned Chief Justice John Marshall adopting a papal bull from the 15th century, saying, if there's heathens on the land that you discover, Spain, you get it along this line, and Portugal, you get it along this line, France and England and everybody else, why don't you pound sand? And the Dutch, please, heretics. English, come back into the fold and maybe we can talk. So Chief Justice John Marshall used a papal declaration giving, and by the way, ample consideration, ample payment was deemed to be had by the natives for having their land stolen. The church felt this way. It was payment enough for the Spanish and the Portuguese to bring the heathens Christianity and take away all their land and destroy their culture and their heritage. It was payment enough that they would get to go to heaven, you know, with people like murderous popes and various and sundry, well, you know, Torquemada, you know, he went to heaven and everything. Right. Some bargain. So, and you know what? If you were a native, you got the bargain even if they had to burn you to death to get it to you. Burn some sense into them. Burn them, I say. Burn a little brains into them. The natives can only hear through their buttocks. Actually, I guess the Pope was an Italian at the time, so I probably need a different accent. I'm not going to fool with it. But anyway, I find the conclusion that Dr. Bill reached, namely that Chief Justice John Marshall was acting in the name of the landed interest, quite compelling, because after all, among other things, in Johnson versus McIntosh, which is the 1823 case that sets forward the, hey, go ahead, steal it all, what do we care, theory of American jurisprudential dealings with the people who were here for a few thousand years before the white folks showed up. Marshall even mentions the fact that Thomas Jefferson, you know, that great architect of freedom, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, had an interest in land companies that were presently being occupied by, you know, those people, the Indians. I know, it's a little bit tough when our national demigods, our national icons, are shown to have feet of clay, or perhaps grasping hands made of gold. But Dr. Bill also did some talking in the first hour about the concept, or the beginning of the second hour, really, the concept of treason. And treason, as a way of sort of picking up from where he left off, if you will. Treason in Merry Oldie Engeland and other countries as well, but it was actually codified to an extent in Merry Oldie Engeland, contained a concept called corruption of blood. Corruption of blood, as opposed to a blood libel, which is something entirely different. Corruption of blood is a notion that follows from another Merry Oldie Engelandi kind of concept called attainder. Parliament would pass a bill of attainder against a treasonous person and seize all of that person's lands. The person was then deemed to be attainted. No chuckling. Bob just said taint. The person so attainted could not then pass his, or it was almost always him, his property down to future generations. Sometimes the crown got it, sometimes the treasonous person's father got it, and it went down another branch of the family. It's all very complicated, and ooh, I still have nightmares about that year in law school. But anyway, so when the recently treasonous, because they were, framers of the Constitution, who had recently separated from Merry Oldie Engeland, against whom they had, yes, really, not kidding, don't be surprised, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachman, 1L baby, hell, you went to law school, oh, never mind, I remember where. After they got done with their treason against England, and when they sat down to write the Constitution, one of the first things they said is, you know, we probably want to get rid of that bill of attainder. And James Madison had some words about it. He said there's a nasty habit. Well, Federalist number 43, James Madison, writing about the treason clause of the Constitution of the United States, said, as, shall we do the accent? Now, he was from Jersey. Was he originally from Virginia? Well, he went to Princeton. He was classmates with Aaron Burr. But he also had a plantation that was staffed, of course, by unfree human beings, you know, three-fifths. But writing about the notion of treason as contained in the Constitution of the United States, that's Article 3, Section 3, and it says, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act, or on confession in open court. The Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason, remember, attainder, bills of attainder, shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attainted. You got that so far? Good. I mean, I'm not trying to talk down or anything. It's just kind of, hell, it's complicated for me. So in explaining himself about all this, little Jimmy Madison, you know, he's about 2.5 feet tall. He's practically a hobbit. Big old alien head brain, though. Said, as treason may be committed against the United States, the authority of the United States ought to be enabled to punish it. But as newfangled, he really did, he said newfangled, but as newfangled and artificial treasons have been the great engines by which violent factions, the natural offspring of free government, see, by this time he'd kind of given up on trying to eliminate factions, and he makes that surrender in like Federalist 10 or something. And he decides that faction is the natural offspring of free government. The natural offspring of free government have usually wreaked their alternate malignity on each other. The convention have, meaning the Constitutional Convention, and we would say today convention has, but they still used good English back then. The convention have, because a convention was a body of more than one person, so you would therefore use the plural and not the singular. The convention have, with great judgment, opposed a barrier to this peculiar danger by inserting a constitutional definition of the crime, fixing the proof necessary for conviction of it, and restraining the Congress, even in punishing it, from extending the consequences of guilt beyond the person of its author. When one did treason, one was deemed to author a treason. Yeah. Fun language back then. So he says, we're not going to let this government get out of hand and just start defining treason willy-nilly. And we're not going to have any bills of attainder. And we're not going to have any attainted people. And we're not going to punish the children for the sins of the fathers. That's what attainder boils down to. You know, back in the Old Testament, it was okay, you know, if daddy stepped on somebody's foot, you could go and lop off his kid's foot, you know, that kind of barbaric crap. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that kind of thing. Generational guilt. So anyway, what happens here? Fast forward to the 21st century. There's really not been any debate about Article 3, Section 3, and corruption of blood, and bills of attainder, and people who are attainted. Because, I mean, like, the passage from Federalist 43 is pretty doggone clear. Clear to everybody except Representative Tom Cotton of Arkansas and Senator David Vitter of Louisiana. Senator Vitter? Who is my neighbor, by the way? Senator Vitter? I'd like you to meet Representative Cotton. Representative Cotton, Senator Vitter. Senator Vitter, Representative Cotton. Now we got enough for bridge. Okay. Remember how we talked about how the notion that we thought was long gone and dead and buried, you know, at midnight under a new moon, no light, people with torches, the concept of where'd it go? Oh, for heaven's sakes. I hate this when it happens. Nullification. Damn. See what happens when I'm away from the microphone for a couple of days? You know how we thought nullification was all dead and buried and gone and over with, but then it turns out that it's not, because here in West Virginia we want to use it over making sure that we can poison more people with mountaintop removal in Texas and Kansas and Indiana or whatever. They want to use it to make sure that people can have lots of guns to come after the government when the government comes after them. You know, treason. Or in other places, they want to use nullification to make sure that the mostly white men folks maintain control over the internal workings of female bodies, right? And we thought, that went out of favor about April of 1865, didn't it? It's back. Well, guess what? Corruption of blood was stricken from the very idea of the United States. I mean, it's not like John C. Calhoun was arguing it. We even went through the Civil War when old Bobby Lee committed treason against the United States. He wasn't tried for it. He wasn't even charged with it. And granted, he did lose the nice house there in Arlington, but it was not worked against, it wasn't worked against his progeny. I mean, there's people out there. I mean, Jefferson Davis's great grandson is still alive, and he ain't exactly selling pencils on the corner. Because even though these treasonous pricks were treasonous pricks, the concept of working the idea of attainder or corruption of blood against them was totally lost. I mean, it was unthinkable. We don't do that. This is the United States of America, for the love of God. We're not merry oldie England. We're not running around beheading people and putting them on pikes and none of that. This here's freedom and liberty, right? Until the last couple of weeks it was. Yeah, Representative Cotton, would you come here? So enter, as noted, Representative Tom Cotton, of Arkansas. Now, he's a scrawny, underfed-looking little thing. Looks like he probably didn't get enough for supper when he was little, and that's probably why, the underfeeding children can have negative consequences. Yeah, I don't think we got some real good brain development going on here. But Representative Tom Cotton is a star darling teabagger, and he wants to stand for freedom, and he wants to protect that freedom. Hallelujah. So, representing Cotton done had him an idea. And this is how the story reads from the Huffington Post. Representative Tom Cotton, ARC, on Wednesday, and somewhere our buddy Fritz is just cringing. On Wednesday last, introduced legislation that would automatically punish family members of people who violate U.S. sanctions against Iran, levying sentences of up to 20 years in prison. The provision was introduced as an amendment to the Nuclear Iran Prevention Act, or NIPA, of 2013, which lays out strong penalties for people who violate human rights, engage in censorship, or commit other abuses associated with the Iranian government. Cotton also seeks to punish any family member of those people, quote, and this is a quote, to include a spouse and any relative to the third degree. And being from Arkansas, representing Cotton knows exactly what it means when it says relative to the third degree. Uncle Daddy! Including parents, children, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces, grandparents, great-grandparents, grandkids, great-grandkids, Cotton said. There would be... Here's some more of the fun part. There would be no investigation if the prime malefactor, really, he used malefactor, of the family is identified as on the list for sanctions, then everyone within their family would automatically come within the sanctions regime as well. It'd be very hard to demonstrate and investigate to conclusive proof, so we just ain't going to bother with it. We's just going to punish them. Children, nephews, nieces, grandchildren, to the third degree. Sister Mama? Now, here's the good part. Here's the good part of that story. Enough people, Republicans and Democrats alike, got bent at Tom Cotton over this that he withdrew his amendment. He kind of had to. Because it was a clear violation of Article 3, Section 3. Because there's a little bit of weasel room in Article 2, 3, Section 3. You may recall, it said, corruption of blood shall not work upon anyone except the person attainted. Yeah, that's right, Ron and Raleigh. Can't get anything past him at all. Can't help myself, says Ron. Hey, Bob, were they going to nip of that in the bud? See, I left it hanging over the rim. You just knew somebody was just saying, oh, what a... Yeah, they were. They were nipping it in the bud, Ron. I know. The shame is enveloping. Okay, so that's Tom Cotton. As in way down yonder in the land of, your feet stink, but mine are rotten. Look away. Dixieland. So that's Tom Cotton, who was stopped from introducing the concept of corruption of blood into the body politic of the United States of America in the second decade of the 21st century, a full 226 years after the ratification of the Constitution of the United States. Not so lucky with Senator Vitter. No. Senator Vitter, who was, after he admitted to having a predilection for hiring professional sex workers to do things for and with him that apparently his lovely lady wife would not, was rewarded with a seat in the United States Senate by the good people of Louisiana. Go figure. Well, we've remarked in the past that the farm bill is being worked on over in the Senate. You might recall that a group of Democrats recently sat on their hands and hummed the Jeopardy theme while Republicans who hate people eating, well, you know, poor people eating food, with some Democrat collusion, ramrodded an amendment through the Ag Committee that cut the living bejesus out of the SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. Just cut the living bejesus out of it because, you know, we're doing too much eating. You might recall that over on the House side, a certain cretin by the name of Stephen Fincher from Tennessee, who received a one-time 70, at least he's gotten millions of dollars over the last 10 years, but he did get one lump sum payment of $70,000 from the federal government for his farm subsidy, declared that those who would not eat, who would not work, should not eat. Yeah. Well, David Vitter did not want to be left out in the cold because he, of course, is every bit the Christian that Senator, that the representing Stephen Fincher is. I mean, you pretty much got to be a Christian in order to declare to the world that you've been a romping with hookers and get to stay not only in government but get advanced to the Senate of the United States. You think a Muslim could get away with that? You think a Jew could pull that off? Hell, they're running Anthony Weiner out of the mayor's race in New York City because there was a picture of him in his tidy whities out on the Twitter in a little piece of retinery orchestrated by some Breitbart pigs. So no Jews, no Muslims. Atheist? Please. They take an atheist outside the city gates and stone him to death and then draw and quarter him and set fire to the pieces. But not a Christian. Not a Christian. Not a Christian who worships the so-called Savior who, seeing a group of people gathered before him and it done went past lunch, said, "Fellas, what have we got in the way? What have we got in the way of eats here?" And the boys looked at him and said, "Boss, we got a few fishes and some loaves." And he said, "Well, give them here." And proceeded to break them into tinier and tinier and tinier pieces until, lo and behold, his 5,000 people had a nice dinner of loaves and fishes. It was a miracle, you see. Because he wasn't going to let the poor folks who had come to hear his message go away hungry. And they was mostly poor folks, because back then everybody was mostly poor. And the few occasional rich ones that showed up went generally away unhappy. "Master, what must I do to be saved?" He looks at him and says, "Hey, everybody, watch this. This is going to be good. All right, bub. Sell everything you have, give it to the poor, and come follow me." And all the Bible says about Yeshua's little practical joke is that the man went away and he was very sorry and sad. But I'm wandering off into the weeds, aren't I? Back to Senator Vitter. So he introduces this amendment, and once again, you can only ask, where the were the Democrats? I mean, they really are. I know they don't believe it, and I know Harry Reid's probably told them that they aren't really, but they really are a majority in the Senate of the United States. It's not like it's the House of Representatives over there where the chimpanzees are just flinging poo at each other and the bonobos are in the corner scared to death. And rightfully so. No, the Democrats sat there as Senator David Vitter, no kidding, offered an amendment to the Farm Bill to make sure that no one who had ever been convicted of a violent crime could ever be eligible for SNAP, Supplementary Nutrition Assistance Program benefits, food stamps. Here's the fun part. It passed by unanimous consent. I ask unanimous consent. from my bill keeping violent criminals from ever eating food, at least food that the people of the government of America, God bless it, pay for. I asked unanimous consent. Granted. Not one Democrat could stand up and say no. Not one. Well, one could have. Hell, any number could have. None did. Because, as I noted on the Twitter feed, Facebook earlier today, when he was right before he was getting ready to bust up the loaves and the fishes, Jesus looked up and said, "Hey, y'all, anybody here got a rap sheet with the Romans? Yeah? Yeah, you? And you? Oh, looks like there's a few of us. Uh-huh. Just get on down the road. I don't care if your belly's rumbling. I don't care if you're about to starve to death. Get on down the road. If you got a rap sheet with the Romans, you ain't gonna eat this here food what's been donated for decent people." That's there in Philippians 4:20. It's not frequently cited, although it is alluded to by the likes of Pastor Hagee. Starve! It is a lifetime ban. Being so proud of what he'd done, Senator Vitter issued a statement. "Under current law, there is a lifetime ban for convicted drug felons, though many states have opted out or modified that ban. Vitter's amendment would extend the lifetime food stamp ban to dangerous sex offenders and murderers." Yeah, now what did that say over there in the Constitution? "No attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attainted." Well, that's all right then. Except for one problem. What if, and I'm just asking what if, because this is one of those hyperpothetical questions. What if your daddy got busted for a violent crime? And what if your daddy had skin darker than a paper bag? And what if he was convicted of that violent crime by a jury that was whiter than a bar of ivory soap? And what if it happened in, oh, I don't know, Neshoba County, Mississippi, or Philadelphia County, Mississippi, or... you get the idea. And what if you're his son or you're his daughter? Well, David Vitter says you need to starve your ass. Your ass needs to starve. Because, see, a 10-year-old can't go and sign up for food stamps by his or herself. Some grown-up has to do it. Well, maybe the mama will do it. What if mama goes down for some sort of heinous felony? Oh, I don't know what. Pick one. Stream littering. Violent stream littering. Jaywalking. No, these have to be felonies. Oh, but it can also be a sex crime. There's a young woman in Florida right now who is being tormented by an overzealous prosecutor there because she had a consensual sexual relationship with another female. She's about to be tried for the crime of love. Or at least lust. And no, it's not a sex crime like we think of sex crimes. It's not a rape because there was no crime of violence, no crime of power or control involved. But if this young woman is convicted and forced to register as a sex offender, David Vitter says that she will never, never be given so much as a goddamn crust of bread through the Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program. So it turns out that this thing, on which the Democrats sat on their hands, and will go into the Farm Bill and eventually be marked up or reconciled in a conference committee, I suppose, with whatever semi-psychedelic, mostly psychotic document comes out of the House of Representatives. They sat on their hands and watched corruption of blood enter the body politic of the United States of America in the second decade of the 21st century, fully 226 years after the passage, after the ratification of the Constitution that said, thou shalt not never do that, no how, no way, no. Interestingly, Senator Vitter's amendment does not include a welfare cutoff for Johns who have been caught or outed by their hookers. There is no attainder, there is no corruption of blood for hypocrisy. Assume for a moment a pregnant woman who, interestingly, this creep from Nebraska says he simply does not understand. No, really, not kidding. He claims to be a right smart fella. I mean, sharp. We're talking about State Senator Bill Kintner. You try to say that without screwing up. State Senator Bill Kintner of Nebraska says that even though he was raised with the moral absolutes of Christianity, the Bible still hasn't solved his biggest mystery. His biggest mystery? The women's. No one understands them. They don't even understand themselves. Books and books and books have been written about it, and no one understands it. Well, we start out the paragraph with females actually being human. They get a them pronoun, but by the end of the sentence, they're its. Kidding. Now, so representing, State Senator of Repiglick in Kansas, no, Nebraska, Senator Kintner says he don't understand women. For instance, he would not understand if a woman were to become pregnant. Nobody, there's been books and books and books written about it, and no one understands it. If a woman was to become pregnant, and let's say she was convicted of a grievous offense, but because she was raising her little one, she was allowed to not go to prison. Let's say there was a really, really super humane judge involved in all of that that let her stay, instead of sending her to prison for, like, the woman that got sent to prison for sending her child to the wrong school, because, you know, this is America, and we're greatest country in the world. But let's say she gets to stay home with her baby and her conviction. No food stamps for her. None. Because you see, and more importantly, because of that, no food stamps for the baby, because David Vitter has just worked a corruption of blood attainder on her, and she is forevermore, until the day she dies, attainted. Now, we used to have this notion in the United States of America that a person might screw up and run afoul of the law. And that person might run afoul of the law egregiously enough that they should have to be incarcerated. But that unless it was murder or treason, well, the operative phrase was pay his or her debt to society. That's what you're doing when you're marking time in the stir. You're paying your debt to society. And when it's over, you are deemed to be, or at least maybe there might be a period of parole or something involved. It's largely gone away, too. A period of rehabilitation. But when it's all over, you know, hey, you know, you got a record, but good luck. You've paid your debt to society. Go on now. Try to do the right thing. Don't screw up again, okay? Yeah, that's over. That's over. State Senator Kempner said, I was state chairman of Young Republicans in Ohio, and she was state chairman of Young Republicans in Nebraska. When I got married, that was a turning point. Holy cow. He doesn't understand her, but it was a turning point, and he apparently refers to her, sweetie. You know, we might, you know, I call Agnes, you know, sweetie. He calls his, apparently, spouse, holy cow. Love. So, there you go. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport. One of Senator Vitter's constituents, I might add, says, starve they, lest ye be starved. Keep them out of jobs. Keep them out of food. Keep them out of housing until they start stealing again. Then jail them at y'all's expense so that y'all can pay for their food, housing, and medical. Smart, that Vitter. Not. Or simply being, as simply pointed out by Ron and Raleigh, Diaper Dave. What a maroon. Old Diaper Dave is getting his Inspector Javert on, ain't he? I've said before, they've found that sweet spot of selfishness, venality, mendacity, and downright meanness. Oh, they have, and they're going to live there, Ron. They are going to, amen, live there. Hey, a note in from, Waggy. He said, Bob, please allow me to up the pot with a challenge valid for the remainder of this week. This time, you may use my name or chat handle as you see fit. Waggy. All right, Waggy. Waggy saw Darlene's challenge, $100, and raised it $50. So there is a $150 challenge on the table in response to Darlene's challenge. Thank you, Waggy, for doing that. And now he's not. And now that Darlene's is not looking for 100 friends, Waggy's is looking for 150. So any combination. Oh God, here we go. 3 at $50, 2 at $75, 6 at $25, 15 at $10, 30 at $5. You pick. And we will get on the road to finishing off this week, this month, and last month in a lot better shape than we were previously. there's just some things you think you've got a right as an American never to see. And some of those things are included in the Constitution because the Constitution says we're never going to see them because they are illegal, they're unconstitutional. We're not going to see, for instance, I don't know, a state religion in which the government of the United States or one of the several states says, hallelujah, we're all Baptists now. Or, pass me a snake, we're all Pentecostals. Or maybe in certain other states, everybody check your toast, the Virgin Mary might be on it, we're all Roman Catholic now. Or another state says, no, 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 that ain't when Easter is, because we're Greek Orthodox now. Establishing a religion. We've got a right to expect that we're never going to see a state religion established. Despite the most fond and fervent wishes of God knows our religious maniacs in this country. We've got a right to think that. Of course, we also thought, well, but those are amendments. That's, you know, 1 through 10, 1 through 11. Corruption of blood business was modified. Actually, it was kind of expanded upon in the 11th Amendment, but that's okay. But court things that were addressed sort of in the Constitution itself, the idea of a court of star chamber in which a person is tried in absentia. The idea of an ever-shifting definition of treason, because it's clearly defined in the Constitution itself. And through Federalist 43, Madison reminds us that, no, this is what it's going to be. Bills of attainder, ex post facto laws. You know what an ex post facto law is. That's a law that, say, Congress or some legislative body would pass after you'd already done something and say, hey, you. What you just did that was legal when you did it, it's not legal anymore, and we're coming after you. And your little dog, too. We have a right to expect that those pernicious devils are never going to raise their heads. But as we have just seen, rights and realities are vastly different things. Vastly different things. And don't think for a minute that just because Tom Cotton got shot down in May, he won't be flying high again come September. Republican ideas never fully go away. Fools that we sometimes are, we think maybe they do. Things like secession. You know, remember when Rick Perry brought up, yeah, we might just have to secede. As long as that Negro's in Washington. Yeah. Ain't nothing safe. Nothing is guarded. Nothing is secure. We tend to think of the things that they want as being the things that we have that are a part of the public commons. They want the air. They want the water. They want the ground. They want what's in the ground. They want what's above the ground. They want to control the air, our public airwaves. They want to control our tax structure. Everything that we understand as the public commons, they want. Did you ever thought that you would see the day that the Constitution itself was a part of the public commons, that the right wing in this country, the David Vitters and Tom Cottons, would seek to liquidate for their own advancement? David Vitter represents the state of Louisiana. Now, it's no more criminal, I doubt, than any of the other states, but the pernicious effects of poverty and criminality interwoven are profound. And he, a Christian, has declared that forgiveness may be all right with his Jesus, but it ain't all right with him, and we ain't going to have none of them former felonious eaters out there. God. Like I said, we got enough out there for 3 or 4 shows in one night. But we're going to open the line. Me and that mouse in my pocket. I'm going to open the lines up, 304-658-3333. If you want to jump into the program, that's the telephonic way. Or if you're living here in the 21st century and you use the Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account, the handle, if you will, via Skype. So jump right in. The conversation is fine. $150 challenge sitting on the table. And, well, it would be wonderful if the gauntlet were picked up, as it were. And don't worry, nobody has to meet at dawn on the field of honor or anything. It just means that we'll have a June for the horn. Okay?
1, 2, 3, 4.
I always get that wrong. I love that song, but it's not the one I'm after. This is Conversation Radio. This is the horn.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? But one ain't here still. Chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels. But that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio. Wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Dance circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby fall down, baby get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour number two underway, and many thanks to Darlene and Waggy for getting this shortened by a day week off to a rousing start. Thank you very much. It is, after all, how we keep this little thing going. 2 minutes past the hour, and the lines have started filling up. A couple of lines remaining open, however. If you are on hold, please stay that way, and we'll come to you, we again, in the order that the call was received. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey there, hi there, ho there.
Well, hey, Tracy.
So, I'm listening to you about the welfare guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
scream at your own leisure, please. I mean,
okay. So, because I went away for the weekend, I went to State Line in Laughlin, and actually came home with money. Yay.
Well.
But yeah, I took their money. They didn't take mine. Well, they took some. Actually, they took some of their tax that I won, but they didn't take the money that I brought to gamble with. So that was awesome. But so, let me get this right. You know, between him and Grampy Pappy going to Syria.
You know, I completely blew right past that.
I didn't hear it come on until about 15 minutes ago, so I thought I had missed that guy tried.
No, sadly, Pappy McCain is just such a nasty old fool. Well,
he's just an angry little man, is he not? Is he still bitter about losing?
Well, did you see the Borowitz report today over there at the New Yorker?
No.
Syrian rebels urge Senator McCain let go of bitterness over 2008 defeat. Oh, we were happy to see Senator McCain, but we urged him. Everything you say is so bitter. Dude, 2008 is so 5 years ago now. You've got to get over it, John. Yeah, of course, it's satire, but it's so...
Oh, God. Beautiful, beautifully, beautiful. Someone asked me about the fat asshole that's telling, you know... So you're telling me, because I saw the headline, right? And I said, I can't read this any more than this because I'm going away. I'm going to have fun. And I saw about the convicted felons, and then you broke it down to a whole other level. So you're saying to me that I'm not a violent felon, so I'm okay. I can still, if I need help, I can go get food stamps.
It kind of depends on your definition of violence. I mean, you might be okay for now, but you never know what. And see, that raises up that whole ex post facto law too. So.
So the definition of violence is going to be it's now going to have fluidity?
Who knows?
Okay.
His particular amendment took in murderers and sex offenders.
So for that poor kid, because it made me think about the guy I was dating when I was 15 and he was 18, or was I 16, whatever, and my mother didn't like him. So she was going to call and said, if you didn't leave my daughter alone, I'm going to call the cop and have you go to jail for statutory rape.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody like him, who we had a consensual relationship, but because my mom didn't like him, so he could have been become a registered sex offender.
Depends on how the statute reads, but possibly.
But kind of sort of like that. Like, you know, some kids, you know, the kid is 18 and the girl is 17. Same thing if she's not at the age.
Well, no, I mean, let's consider a situation, Tracy, that's got real possibility. Let's say that somebody is convicted of an allegedly violent or sex... I don't even like the term sex crime. An allegedly violent crime. And let's say that by some miracle, they managed to live some sort of relatively normal, stable, semi-stable life once they get out of the stir.
Right.
Let's say that he enters into a traditional family marriage between one man and one woman, like the right wing wants him to do, and all the good followers of Jesus, like David Vitter, want him to do. Okay, so let's say he's not doing the best because he's out of the penitentiary. He's got a record that's not impressive. Because murder and mayhem never are. And let's say that even though he's going to work and he's got him a minimum wage job, maybe he's got him two minimum wage jobs. Let's say that maybe that doesn't meet quite the standards for keeping a couple of youngins fed. Well, that means, so we're going to send his wife down to the welfare office to go through the paperwork. Because he's a convicted violent criminal, and that means that America wants him to, David Vitter wants him to starve to damn death. And so do the Democrats who sat on their little old hands. Okay? So here's how that works, because everybody knows that if you're on food stamps, you're eating bourguignon, and you got a lobster and lobster forks, and it's shrimp cocktails for breakfast, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
As long as it doesn't come to more than about $3 a day. And remember, come November, that's going to get cut back to about $1.27.
Right.
Okay? So Mama is going to go down and sign up for the welfare and get the SNAP benefits, but I guess they're going to have to automatically subtract Daddy. Because, he's one of those felonious eaters.
Right.
So that means that the calculation there, because what happens, anybody who's ever had the food stamp or SNAP benefits knows, you don't sit there and dole it out and say, here, toddler, here's $1.27, go down and get you a banana at the grocery store. You go and do your grocery shopping, right?
Right.
So the portion of the grocery shopping that would be Daddy gets cut off before anything ever happens. So that means there's less to eat for the babies and less to eat for Mama. And, Daddy's not allowed to eat at all.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this measure going to contain, because the right wings are, that Obamacare, they're going to have 150 million new IRS agents to come and take you to Guantanamo if you don't have your Obamacare. Well, do we get to ask then, Tracy, if there's going to be a whole new layer of law enforcement coming around to see if felonious Daddy's eating a goddamn little Debbie?
When I hear stuff like this, and it's forever when you talk about the government and these welfare queens, Michelle Bachmann and all of them, they are some of the biggest welfare queens ever. Okay? And you're going to mess with somebody's food now? Are these people just that evil? They are just that evil. And I keep thinking it can't get any worse. And then I hear this. I hear that because now they're cutting into people's food. Now, like you said, old boy is trying to get himself together. Okay, he made a mistake. He paid his debt to society. Okay, he got out of prison. Yes, he has a record, but somehow he's managed to get married, trying to raise his kids so they don't wind up going the same path that he does here, right? And now, you're going to put this man back in a situation that he's going to do whatever it takes to feed his family, which then will probably put him back in prison, which then will add to, put one more person in this prison industrial complex. It's back to where they want him to be in the first place. It's right up there with saying that if you are a drug conviction, you can't get financial aid.
Well, apparently one of the things that Vitter's little press release pointed out, Tracy, is that if you have a drug conviction, You can't be doing no eating either. But it upset Senator Vitter that apparently some states have modified that rule so that they can let the former drug offenders have a little bit of food now and then, you know, miserable moldy crust or whatever.
Right.
It's the greatest country in the world. Did you know that, Tracy? It's America's the greatest country in the world.
The greatest country in the world. And because Jesus, we were formed as we were ordained by God himself. Because this
you're getting a little too good at that.
I'm sorry. Well, it's a combination of listening to you, Bob, and calling my mother, who has, you know, moved to North Carolina and is fighting her best not to sell spicy from North Carolina.
Mm.
And so it's wow. Blessed are they that do this and do that and do this. And, you know, do unto...
Somebody took one of them straight razors to that part of the Bible and cut it out for all that. I really would like to assign a little bit of. Well, you can't really because it was unanimous consent. I guess the whole damn Democratic contingent in the Senate sat on their hands for this.
And again, like you said, last time we checked, didn't the motherfuckers in Democrat? Oh, see, now you got my cousin. I've been so good. Who are Democrats, don't they have the majority? They let this fool stand up and put this to all.
What it boils down to, Tracy, is they're chicken shits because they know when they go back home to run for re-election that there's going to be some right-winger who's done some opposition research who says, my opponent voted to feed convicted felons out. Ain't that just sick? What kind of a sicko is Senator Thumbbutt? What a liberal.
I just, you know, as much as it sickens me, this is one of those things where you can't sit down because now I'm going to have to write to people and call people and say, what the hell?
Well, I think you've got a right to. I mean, you don't need me to think that. It's the truth. You have a right to. You're in California. You got a right to ask questions of Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein.
Is that what the hell, bitches?
Senator Stabenow of Michigan, Senator Franken.
Yeah, Mr. Al Franken is always talking about me sitting. I'm getting emails to send him money for re-election, but I don't.
Oh, I've managed to avoid that so far, but.
Yeah. You know, and I'm going. You people are just sitting there and letting these bullies. You're being bullied, and into letting this shit go.
Well, I don't want to get this wrong. I can't do the research on the fly right now. And I went looking before the show started, and I didn't. But, you know, the news story referenced the fact that it was passed by unanimous consent. Now, does that mean it was passed by the full body of the Senate, or does that mean that it was passed by the committee by unanimous consent? I don't know.
So does it mean still that there's a chance that this bullshit, we could say, oh, this is not going to, that they can't get this passed into law?
I wouldn't bet that way.
So we're going to take away what little food that people get. It's, you know, because
well, look, I mean, this is insult on injury. This is whipped cream on shit to begin with, Tracy. Because like I said a week or so ago, by a 15-5 vote inside the Ag Committee of the Senate of the United States, which has a Democratic majority, they voted to cut $4 billion out of food stamps and add billions to agricultural insurance subsidies.
Agricultural insurance subsidies?
Yeah, you know, like your crop gets wiped out by a climate-induced weather crisis. There's going to be more money there for that. But if you're rendered homeless, well, we're not going to go there. Yeah, they cut out $4 billion in food stamp money. 15-5. That means there were 11 Democrats and 9 Republicans, and 6 Democrats voted to do it.
You don't see me, but I'm just doing that face that, like, my mouth is agape. And I'm just, again, these Christian values. That, you know,
these Christian values will be the end of us.
It's going to be the end of this country. It really, really is. Because you have a certain amount of people who feel, it's, like you said, it's their right to have everything, to have the air, the water, the land, and like you said, what comes in the land, and, you know, and out of the water, and everything, because God ordained it to be so. But if you're a true Christian, you know, aside, you know, with the stuff with the air pollution and all that, nothing on this earth is yours, okay? We are merely stewards of this. We are to be taking care of what the Lord gave us to take care of. Again, trying to find it in the Bible. Trying to find it. I'm no, you know, I am no biblical scholar by no means, shape, form, or of the imagination. See, I'm getting off tongue tied. However, I know that the Bible that I read and the Lord that I worship and serve, he is out of his history at this point. If Jesus came back today,
but not hot enough to send down a lightning bolt to reduce a certain fetishist senator from Louisiana into a greasy spot.
Right, into a oil spot as dark as the oil that BP, you know, dumped into the Gulf of his state. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He's probably one of his main supporters, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised. Was it you that I said that I heard somebody say that that the politicians should be like NASCAR drivers?
Yeah.
And have, you know, be forced to wear the tags of whatever, you know, the things or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, there's a news story about that, oddly enough. I sat down and watched the Coca-Cola 600 on Sunday. That one everybody famed.
Really?
Yeah, I've been known to do it from time to time. We just don't talk about it a lot, but
well,
I did.
You have a ride.
I said, and it's a long race, and they weren't hardly into that thing. I mean, you talk about being able to screw up a one-car funeral. Fox News, well, Fox Sports, but, you know.
Fox News.
Yeah, it's all Fox. It's all Foxed up. They had one of their little gizmo cameras that was on guy wires over top of the track that they could move around and stuff.
Right.
And I knew things were not going to come out well when in the pre-race festivities they included a ceremony in which they gave a Medal of Freedom or some such Kafka-esque crap to Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. No, I'm not kidding. And the reason I bring this up is because even though Jesus wasn't there to hurl a lightning bolt or anything, or Zeus, or the goddess of irony was at work. She seldom takes a day off.
No.
And so they barely, they'd given Oliver North his Laurel and Hardy handshake or whatever, and they barely got the race started when one of the cables to the Fox News gizmo cam busted loose. At which point it fell onto the track and got picked up by the wheel of an Aussie racer whose last name is Ambrose, who then trailed it all over the track and beat the living hell out of other people's cars with it. And another chunk of it flew into the crowd and lashed 10 people who had to be taken to the hospital to be checked out for injuries that they received from Fox News' Gizmocam cable. It occasioned the damnedest stoppage in racing I've seen in a long time. They had to stop those cars, Tracy, and park them on pit road while everybody got to work on their cars because of what had happened to Mr. Ambrose's car. And I sat there thinking, well, I will be dipped. That's what that's what you get for giving a Laurel and Hardy handshake. The knick-knack of freedom to Oliver North.
It's right up there, when you listen, it would be like giving Spiro Agnew something like that.
Right. The Spiro T. Agnew Truthiness Award.
Right.
Oh, my God, here's an update. In that committee vote on cutting SNAP benefits, in the chat room, I'm being told, Larry says, in that committee vote, only 2 of the 5 no votes for cutting food stamps were cast by dithercrats. So, in other words, 9 Democrats voted to take food out of people's mouths.
Nine people.
Mm-hmm.
I just, so, again, we here we are worrying about Benghazi and the IRS and all this, but we're not worried about feeding people.
Not so much.
I mean, you got to feed these people because... you need the people to go and feed the poor people going to the military, but you need to feed these people so you can go ahead and fight that war that McCain is trying to stir up in Syria.
But remember, we didn't do such a good job of that in Iraq. You remember the $30 Halliburger?
Right.
You remember the story of the kitchens for feeding the troops that had skank bloody meat laying on the floor and rotten vegetables in the fridge?
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
not so much. I sit in awesome wonder because I I'm the eternal optimist and I keep hoping and praying and wishing and hoping and praying and wishing that someday this country will be the grand experiment that our forefathers wanted it to be. But then I hear about, Grandpappy McCain being, getting all worked up over Syria and Benghazi. So he went from Benghazi to Syria, right? So are they done with Benghazi yet?
No, I don't think so. This was just a lull in the action.
Mm-hmm. And then the whole IRS thing. So now we got the Benghazi conspiracy going, and then we got the IRS conspiracy going, saying that, how dare they investigate supposedly nonprofit organizations that may have political leaning and are using the guise of nonprofit organizations so they don't have to talk about who they're contributing money to, yes?
Is that the gist
of it?
You got it.
Okay. Because, see, like I said, sometimes I'm slow.
No, you're banging away on all 8 cylinders on that.
Sometimes I get, because a lot of times I think I'm stupid.
Or maybe 6 in a lithium ion battery in common parlance, or 4.
Okay. So, I sometimes think I'm an idiot because I listen to the news, and I think, I must be stupid because I can't believe this shit is going on and nobody's doing anything about it. So, the whole, with all the stuff that's going on with the IRS and how Bush used the IRS to investigate stuff, what pisses me off to the highest level of pissed off them, is that a word? Did I just make up a word?
It is now.
Okay, pissed off them, is that these bitch, these little pussy ass, candy ass Democrats don't call these fools on nothing. That's what upsets me. That is.
Well, I mean, that, you know, look, cutting $4 billion out of food stamps is a hanging curveball right over the middle of the plate, about belt high and bigger than a cantaloupe. If you cannot swat that thing about 700 feet out of the park, why are you even trying to play?
What? Exactly. Why? It's like giving Hank Aaron a tee ball, right? He's all you have to pitch.
Yeah, just set it up on the tee, Hammer and Hank, and send it on out of here.
Exactly. It's hey, that was a pretty good analogy, wasn't it?
It works real good.
It's one of those things where you sit back and say, I can't be the only one upset about this. I can't be.
Well, no. What just absolutely gives me the fan tods, Tracy, is how few people are talking about this. They cut four, and this is a week old. They cut $4 billion out of the food stamp budget.
Just what? Just God.
When it was already set to be cut anyway.
Anyway. So you're going to take more money. But let's see if, because I've been educating people, you know, about Walmart. And God help me, every so often I have to shop at Walmart, and it, because everything that I need, a lot of the stores don't carry it. And I usually will pay a higher price for anything just so I don't have to go into Walmart.
And sometimes you don't. I mean, it's no guarantee that going to Walmart is going to yield you a lower price. As many times as not, as long as you're not in whole paycheck, for you can go to Ralph's. Ralph's is competitive with Walmart.
Very much so.
And it is at least titularly a union shop.
Yep. I go to Ralph's. I go to Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's is TV.
Now, see, I keep hearing about Trader Joe's. I want to check that out. But I don't live in civilization.
Well,
I got to drive to Manassas to go to freaking Costco, okay?
Well, again, Bob, I told you the extra room is ready. Sorry, Tim.
Hey, you know what? I saw the rerun of Anthony Bourdain's CNN show about Koreatown, and I saw those food trucks, and I thought of you immediately.
Well, I didn't catch it. It just so happened.
The best question was when he asked the guy, who's apparently a certifiable genius with food. You know, he's doing like kimchi tacos and just crazy stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
And so he says, I mean, so does this go over, like, you know, you go up into Brentwood or something? And he goes, I send the trucks to Beverly Hills. And it goes over great. They come toddling out in their Versace robes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Bourdain was going to have a baby.
Mm-hmm. All day long.
Yeah.
All day long.
Hey, Tracy, it's awful good to hear from you, dear. I tell you what, we're going to roll on because the lights is lighting up.
Oh.
As long as people stay lit. But I'm glad you made it home. Made it home from your excursion better than you left.
And I will be going to Netroots Nation. I got my ticket.
Oh, bless your heart! I hope you have fun.
I'm going to do my darndest. So anyway, you know how I say it. God bless you and God keep you. You know you guys are always in my prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Always. I will talk to you later, my love.
All right, you take care, Tracy. Drive safe.
Always.
Bye now. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm well, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. Listened with a lot of interest to your first hour. Tied in today with a story I was reading about of the parents up in Washington State that didn't get their children any medical care. The first one died a couple years ago. And
was it Washington or Oregon? Because Oregon has a terrible problem with that.
This one was these were parents a couple years ago. Their 18-month-old died. He had pneumonia, and they wouldn't take him to the doctor.
Okay, yeah.
they got probation out of that deal, and here a few weeks ago, whatever it was, their two-year-old or so died because they wouldn't take him to the doctor again. And I just had so much of a hard time processing and trying to write about this in the comments section of a site that I go to. I just can't fathom it. How, I don't care what religion you are or aren't, how can you not get help for your children? You know, I don't understand it. And how I say this ties in is, how can these Dems today sit there and listen to that farm bill be proposed with all the things Vitters has put in there and say nothing?
Well, the thing that drives me batty out of this, Kevin, like there's something that doesn't, is that the deficit is sort of not that great a concern anymore. It's gone down. It's going down. Things are changing. Things are turning around. And this is the last thing we need to be balanced, you know, reducing the deficit on, is the ability of Americans who are, what's the official term? Food, what? Nutritionally, it's not challenged or something. But at risk, people at risk of going hungry. If this country is at the point, Kevin, where we have to defeat the deficit on the backs of hungry people, then you know what? We can roll down the shutters and turn off the lights.
That's right.
Because we're closed. We're done.
And that is something I'm struggling with too, because I hate to admit it, I hate to say it, but I'm getting to that point of saying, we've lost. It's over. Those of you that can, find another country to go to. Get the hell out before it gets any worse.
Well, you might be interested to know, I saw a news story earlier today. Lo and behold, the most popular country in the world, care to guess?
Venezuela?
No, Germany.
Germany?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that bad a choice when you consider...
It comes from, it's the country ratings poll that's conducted by the BBC World Service. The most positive response was Germany, followed by Canada, followed by the UK, Japan, France, the EU, the rest of the EU, I guess, Brazil, USA is like, you know, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We're 8. China is right behind us. South Korea right behind China. And Iran comes in. Iran. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Iran comes in 17th. Meanwhile, the most negatively viewed country. And Iran is viewed far more negatively than positively. But interestingly, by a matter of seven, Israel beats Iran by 7 percentage points, just eking out ahead of North Korea.
Did they give a reason why Israel was that far down? Because, I mean, okay, you got the religious and ethnic things going on there, but in terms of infrastructure,
it's a poll of 26,000 people around the globe measuring how positively or negatively respondents viewed 25 different countries. So let's see. For instance, Germany has a positive view from 59%, and 15% view Germany negatively. The United States has 45% positive view, 34% negative view. China, 42% positive view, 39% negative view. Israel, 21% positive view, 52% negative view. just ahead of North Korea.
Who ended up last?
I'm just looking at the graph that I've got here, and it doesn't have 25 countries. Well, it's the average of 22 tracking countries, 2012 to 2013.
I would think North Korea would be, like, if not last, right there at the bottom. I can't think of too many other countries that I could pick out ahead of North Korea that I wouldn't want to go to. But it's, you know, the UK, I read some articles last night. It's getting scary over there, too, in terms of some of the stuff they're doing. And it's, I'm just having trouble processing the mindset of people, you know, in care for your fellow man. Just overall basic care of your fellow man. You know, because when you're talking about, oh, yeah, we're not going to let anybody that's a convicted violent felon ever get food stamps again, just like you're saying, you know, there could be this convicted felon from back in the 1950s who happened to be black, who was convicted by an all-white jury and was nowhere near guilty, and you're going to penalize him for life? And I can't understand it. I guess I was raised with more thought of my fellow man than what some people are, but, you know, when you've got the Christian types promoting stuff like this, and I liked your analogy because the Jesus that's portrayed in the Bible ain't the Jesus they're allegedly worshiping. And it's all swirling around in my head. I'm having a very hard time understanding how, in this article I read today about these parents up in Washington, there were people defending them based on religious freedom.
Please, that just makes me eat dirt and run rabbits. If you've got the
You want to do that for yourself, go right ahead. But that child does not have a choice. And I couldn't personally stand there and watch my child get that sick.
Kevin, while you may have been raised in a religious tradition, I remember our first conversation. And from that time forward, you have never been religiously insane, okay? Anyone who would let his or her child die of preventable illness, and it probably happens thousands of times every year. For instance, if a little Jehovah's Witness child just needs a blood transfusion, baby gotta die. And the Supreme Court has said, absolutely, let the kid die. Because, you know, liberty, freedom, America. But the reason there's this disconnect between your attempt to comprehend that conduct and the conduct itself is because whatever things life has handed you, it has never taken away your ability to perceive reality as reality. And you can no more pray away appendicitis than you can pray away the gay or pray away poverty.
Yeah, exactly. But in saying that, Bob, I've been around the very right-wing religious, and even those that I were around back in the 80s, you were in Alabama that same time period, they wouldn't have even thought about doing something. Most of them, you know, they wouldn't have even come close.
Hey, you know what? I was thinking about this very thing the other day, Kevin. I remember when the church that I was raised in, and it pridefully boasted 2,000 members. Okay.
Yep.
I remember when they put on like their 50th anniversary or whatever homecoming.
Oh yeah.
they paid Tom Lester, who had played Ebb on Green Acres, to come and give us his testimony. They paid him. They paid him. Out of the nickels and dimes that I, as a child, put in the plate every Sunday morning, they paid a TV actor to come and tell us his testimony of what Christ had meant in his life.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, so no, they were just as dumb and venal then as they are now. I think it's probably they've gotten more folks hoodooed, but another part of it is that it is more easily reported upon now. Now that same church later on in the 1980s, I mentioned Oliver North earlier.
Right.
Getting his Laurel and Hardy handshake of freedom from Fox News before they whipped the hell out of the crowd.
Yep.
That church I went to back in the 80s spent $20,000 of 1980s money bringing Oliver North to come and give his testimonial of how Christ had moved in his life.
Yep. Yep. And you know what was said about that back in the 80s, too, is unless you happened to be on the church board, you didn't know that these people got paid that kind of money for coming and speaking?
Well, I found out.
Look at it.
And I was incensed.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's what I'm saying. Unless you had some way of knowing that, you had an in or something. Normally, the congregation didn't know those kinds of things. And that's what makes it all that more egregious. Is, like you said, you were incensed when you found out. Why were you incensed? Because that was church money going to...
Well, and not... it's a hard thing to bite that bullet of despair and recognize that, because there was a lot of work that went in on the part of those little old blue-haired ladies down in the basement to teach me that Jesus said we have to love each other as he has loved us, and that for God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And this is not Wednesday, dadgummit. But there's a lot of work, and then when you get upstairs and you find out what a tawdry, filthy mess it is, and that they'll take the pennies that you were allegedly giving to help the missionaries bring Jesus to them people in Africa, and they're going to give it. You know, where does it say in the New Testament, take up thy traitorous Iran-Contra co-conspirator and follow me, Kevin?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it just... And I think you guys have a point there about it's more reported on, but I still think there's something that has significantly changed in that more people...
Well, they've gotten themselves into the seat. They've gotten themselves more perniciously into the seats of power, Kevin. I think that's fairly clear. Because, and remember, you know, the thing you have to understand about Ollie North is that he's not perfect. Just forgive him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And see, that's how a man like David Vitter can be proven conclusively to have, you know, at the same time when he was sitting in the House of Representatives, hooting and a-hollering and speaking in tongues and rolling on the floor and handling serpents and the like and drinking, swigging strychnine, at the same time that he can do all that and talk about his family values and how he loves the little fetuses, he can be cavorting with one of the most well-known madams and her prostitutes in Washington, D.C., and not only that, but apparently going home to New Orleans and doing more of the same. He gets caught. He pulls a Jimmy Swaggart. He says, I have sinned against you. And brings his poor wife up there to stand there looking like a graven image for the absolute shame and humiliation that he had brought on her. But I'm sure they had a talk before then. He said, honey, You like them Louis Vuitton bags you carry around, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you know that my lawyers is better than your lawyers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you know you're going to be shunned by the church if you don't forgive me. So you just stand there and don't worry your pretty little head. And baby boy is going to the Senate.
Yep. And look what happened up in North
Carolina. Now, I've seen him on a number of occasions in our little old building. I have never seen Mrs. Vitter.
Yep.
I'm not kidding when I say he's our neighbor. That evening, he came down in the tank top T-shirt with the shiny orange basketball shorts. Whew! Because Ferg was with me, and we were going to the laundry room, and he was going to the laundry room. And I looked at Ferg, and Ferg looked at me, and I looked at Ferg and said, "Not a damn word, boy, not a damn word." And we got outside, and he about come unglued. Daddy, was that? Yes, son. That's the family value, yep. Senator from Louisiana.
Yep. Well, like I said...
But to be fair, I haven't seen him running around with anybody that looked obviously like a hooker.
He's learned to be more careful, Bob. You know, when you make a mistake like that, you got to learn from it and do things differently.
Well, I'll tell you what, he may have learned that, but he sure did miss out on the Sermon on the Mount.
Oh yeah. And I, religion aside, I really hope there's something after life, in this life, karma, whatever you want to call it. I really hope someday, somehow, people like Vitters get what's coming to them, for lack of a better way to say it. I hope somewhere there's some kind of cosmic justice for things like this.
Oh, you mean like a hell where they put a funnel down his throat like they do a goose to make foie gras and just pump him full of food for the, you know, for the utter gluttony that he displayed when he talked about, you know, when he talked about wanting to keep human beings from eating food. Because see, he's not perfect, just forgiven. That applies to David Vitter, Kevin, but it does not apply to a guy who has served his time and come out to try to rebuild something of a life.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's not a matter of revenge. I would love to see these people have an understanding of the damage they've done to other people. And the only way you can have that understanding is to experience it. So if there's, you know, reincarnation, I'm all for David Vitter's coming back as, you know, functionally illiterate, poor, of the wrong ethnic majority or minority. You know what I'm saying?
How about if he just comes back white when white is about 10% of America?
Yeah, that would work, except more like 1%, I think. You know, because when that happens, there's still going to be this inequality, and we as a human race have somehow got to learn that, you know, I'm blind, I don't see color. That's the only thing I love about my blindness. I can't see a person's color, I can't see how they're dressed, I can't judge them on that. And I so wish, you know, back in Florida, I ran into this where people, oh, I'm not racist. And I'm just like, oh my God, do you not understand what you just said? You know, and it, I, I wouldn't wish this blindness on anyone, but that's the one thing I absolutely love about it. You know, yeah, sometimes I can hear in a person's voice that they may be of a different ethnic background, but for some reason, when you can't see them and you have to judge a person on the merits of being a person, it makes it so much easier to get along with them. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, but it's never that I was a racist, as much as I could not be one, but it's just that I feel a sense of freedom in not even being able to judge a person upon their looks. That it is kind of freeing to me. But that's the only good thing I'll say about the blindness. You know, 99.9% of it I hate, but that one thing I think about when I hear a man like David Vitter's talk about, we're not going to give convicted felons, alleged violent felons, the chance to ever get food stamps again in their life. And when you and Tracy were talking, I wanted to point that out too, Bob. In a lot of states, they consider any weapon used, you know, like you walk into a store and you point a gun and say, give me your money. You didn't use the weapon, you didn't hurt anybody, but it's still a violent crime because you used that weapon. So, you know, that could apply to a pencil, a knife, a gun, whatever, and it's on your record as a violent crime. And, you know, the injustice of just that alone, to say, okay, just because you made this mistake at 18, never again do we give you food stamps or do anything to try and get you back being a productive member of society, is just so wrong on so many levels, especially for a guy like Vitter's to say that, and for the American and Louisiana people to not realize how hypocritical of it is for him to say it. And so, you know, I want to thank you for speaking out and pointing that out today, of saying, where were the Democrats? Cause
don't worry, the number of people actually talking about this story is something approaching mathematical zero, so.
It needs to be, you know, I can't. Who were the two? Did it list the two Democrats that voted against that?
No, I didn't get that far.
I don't know. If it was a committee, Sanders probably wasn't on it. But I would guess that would be one of the no votes.
Well, I mean, let's see here. We can just find out.
And my point in mentioning that is that that's something that I hope people take into account when you go into the voting booth, is no matter how liberal your senator or congressman wants to sound, look at their record, see if they spoke up on things like this. I won't vote for my Democratic senator here in Colorado.
Well, here's your Democratic membership of the Senate Agriculture Committee. Let's see, Patrick Leahy of Vermont, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Tom Harkin of Iowa, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Max Baucus of Montana, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Joe Donnelly, Democrat of Indiana, William Mo Cowan, Massachusetts Democrat, and Michael Bennett, Democrat of Colorado, and Debbie Stabenow of Michigan.
So out of all those people, only two of them voted against it, or even...
And my best guess for that, I could be wrong, but my best guess would be Sherrod Brown and Tom Harkin.
Yep. And if you have the ability to post that on your site or send me a link to that, could you?
Yeah, I'll try. Sure.
Write some of these senators and ask them why they chose not to say anything. Especially my senator, because Senator Bennett is an alleged Democrat.
I like the way you use that, alleged.
The alleged is the key word there, because there's not a Democrat bone in that man's body except for what he says there is. And, I won't ever vote for the man because of the hypocrisy. You know, some of those other people you mentioned on there, they might have a good reason for not saying anything on this bill today, because I know some of them have taken stands before on things, but some of these...
Okay, it's gotten worse. There was only one Democrat who voted against the cuts to the food stamp program. We're just sort of learning this as we go.
Well, I would bet on Sherrod Brown.
You'd lose.
Wow.
The only one to vote against it, the only Democrat to vote against it, was... Kirsten Gillibrand of New York.
Wow.
Let's see. Okay, you said, one of the guys in the chat room said check your email. Nothing here.
So, the other vote was an independent or a Republican?
Yeah.
Did it say?
There were five votes against it. There were five votes against cutting $4 billion from the food stamp program in the new farm.
Wow.
Well, only one of them was a Democrat. So, just to reinforce, that's a week ago.
Right.
On the other hand, the Senate sat on its hands to permit David Vitter's starve amendment by unanimous consent.
Yep. Amazing.
Sickening.
Amazing. Yeah, especially for some of those senators that we know pride themselves on being liberal, you know, and that's what irritates.
Yeah, but they've been taught to fear the deficit. And to fear a Republican wielding the deficit like a cudgel.
Well, see, I don't... Like you said, if we've got to go to that amount of fear to cut the deficit, it's time to close the doors, because...
I do like Jack's explanation, Jack in Shreveport. He says, Bob, when the Farm Bill came up in the Senate, the Democrats thought they heard Farmville... and left and logged on to Facebook. That's funny.
Yeah, well, this group of Democrats is very possible, too. So.
Well, Kevin, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Yep, Bob, thank you for bringing this up. I really do appreciate when you bring things like this up that I wouldn't have learned anywhere else. So, and it just kind of ties in with some of the other stuff that I've been talking about today, so, you know, it gives me a little bit more ammunition, as it were, to talk about. So, thank you for that, and thank you for your show.
Well, thank you for the time you spend with us. Kevin, you have a good evening.
You too, Bob. All thank right. you.
Bye now. Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Onward we go. 304-658-3333 is the number. Jim with a question. Which one has the diaper fetish? That's Vitter. So the hookers in New Orleans have reported. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes. Edward?
Edward.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to call and make a few statements about that crazy woman that you were had playing her program from Moorhead, North Carolina, last week.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually Moorhead City. Named after a governor of North Carolina, and I know because I was born there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That would give you a degree of expertise.
I beg your pardon?
I said that would give you a degree of expertise.
Yes. And she was absolutely nuts. We had a little radio station years ago, but they never had anybody like that on there. In fact, do you have a...
Well, she was... No. Wait, Edward. Before we get ahead of ourselves, understand, she's not in Moorhead City.
Oh, she's not.
She is a nationally syndicated Fox radio talk show host.
Holy
she just
Jesus.
She just happened to be getting a call from somebody who works for the Scoos in Moorhead City.
Well, Lord of mercy. I didn't know that. I thought she was calling from Moorhead. Anyway.
No, her voice telling people to go out and punch an Obama voter in the face was heard all across this greatest country in the world.
Oh, my word. Well, I'm glad she's not from Moorhead City because they have one of my favorite seafood restaurants in all the world there.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah. It's called the Sanitary Fish Market.
Well, yummy.
And they also...
Not too far from the coast, then, is it?
It's built right out over the water. In fact, I like to sit out over the water, and the sailboats come by, and they look like they're going to come right into the restaurant.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, anyway... talking about the radio, I wanted to make a little confession. Do you have a seatbelt on?
Yes.
Good. Well, this little radio station we had there, every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, I had to be there with three other fellows. I used to sing in a gospel quartet.
Oh, mercy sakes. With or without accompaniment. Now, hold on here.
We had accompaniment up piano.
Okay, okay, okay. Well, that makes it a little bit easier. I remember coming in for the Sunday morning shift and listening to the gospel quartet at the Gospel Voice, and they didn't, you know, and they were Church of Christers, and they didn't have so much as a pitch pipe. And I don't care if you are young and hearty and 16 years old. That's nothing for a human being to have to hear at 8 o'clock in the morning.
You're telling me. Well, one of the strange things was there was this door that went into another room, and it had a Venetian blind on it. And behind the blind, there was a great big photograph that while we were singing, the... station manager would flip the blind open and close. It was that famous, famous photograph of the nude Marilyn Monroe.
No.
Yes. And let me tell you, the tenor, every time he did that, he'd go up at least an octave.
I was going to say that would have to cause just a little bit of consternation on the part of some righteous young men singing the Lord's music.
We weren't that righteous.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? Truth be told, I've known some purveyors of gospel music to be among the very best party animals on the planet.
Well, we were. Let me tell you. Well, one reason another call, I get a little pamphlet called the Washington Spectator.
Mm-hmm.
And down here it says percentage of Americans who believed armed revolution might be necessary in the next few years to preserve our liberty. Republicans, 44%, Democrats, 18%, Independents, 27%, total, 29%. What the hell is wrong with these people?
Well, it's like that scene out of Hamlet, Edward, where King Claudius is pouring poison into the ear of the senior King Hamlet.
Yeah.
There's been nothing. There's been an entire couple of generations now of Americans having nothing but pure poison poured into their ears via the likes of Hannity and Limbaugh and the Savage Wiener and this woman that wants people to get socked in the face. you know, the fact of the matter, and the other side of that, though, Edward, is that there has been precious little in the way of pushback.
Well, I don't understand that. Don't people have a mind of their own anymore?
No. A whole lot don't. And,
well,
of course,
I think you're right. I guess they don't.
John Dean wrote a book, probably 8-10 years ago, and it was titled similarly to Barry Goldwater's book, The Conscience of a Conservative.
Yeah.
And he explained, John Dean did, at great pains, what happens inside the right-wing mind when they find somebody that they are willing to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And they abandon all reason, and they abandon decency, because they are trained from the ground up to respect authority and to follow authority. Now, see, for instance, the reason I could never be a right-wing talker is because I will not, apart from occasionally asking people to go and help us out with the ACAC, I'm not going to tell anybody what to do. I don't even recall telling anybody to go vote.
Well, you know, I was never taught that. I couldn't say my family was particularly progressive or liberal or whatever, but I was never told that I couldn't think anything I wanted to. In fact, I would get in arguments with my eldest aunt, who was born in 1885, and she maintained that the astronauts did not go to the moon, that was just a Hollywood set.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, and we used to argue about that. And also, I would preach evolution. She didn't believe that either. I said, Aunt Olive Ann, now let me explain it to you. You see all these trees out here? If you shake one of those trees, one of our cousins will fall out if they don't hang on by their tail. That's called devolution. You read.
You take your progress where you can find it. But the truth of the matter is, there was another transformation that took place, especially in the South. Of course, you talking about coming from North Carolina. I mean, yeah, for years and years and years, North Carolina was sort of viewed as the sane Southern state.
Well, we used to say this little thing: North Carolina is a valley between two mountains of conceit, Virginia and South Carolina.
And there you go.
There you go.
starting with people like Falwell, you know, it was Falwell who militarized and weaponized Protestantism.
Oh, yeah.
Especially evangelical Protestantism.
Oh, please.
And beginning with that, in the late 70s, the early 80s, and his ascendancy along with the so-called Reagan Revolution is part and parcel of what transformed the landscape of this country.
Yeah.
See, where you might used to get into it with your aunt over evolution or the Apollo program.
Yeah.
A lot of folks would and did inside their homes, but there weren't people standing on street corners about it.
Oh, no, we were very genteel about it. I mean, we didn't scream at each other and whatnot.
But I remember very well a few years back when I had a fella, and I was just down at the Rippy Mart, I was getting gasoline or whatever, and this is just a quiet little town where people aren't particularly obstreperous or anything like that. And I had a fella who was perfectly sane, allegedly. I mean, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't walking around talking to his flashlight or anything. he was a businessman in town who just decided that I needed to understand that we didn't need no space program, because that was just a way for all them atheist scientists to try to disprove the existence of Almighty God.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
And I hadn't done anything to solicit that.
No.
I was minding my own business. And just, good afternoon, neighbor, did you know? And that would have been unthinkable even 10 or 15 years before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to tell you one other thing. One of my dearest great aunts, Aunt Bette, just like Bette Midler,
mm-hmm.
She was born, I think, in 1850. And one time, I used to love to go by and talk with her because she could tell me all sorts of wonderful stories. And I asked her one time, I said, "Aunt Bet, what did you think of Mr. Lincoln?" And she says, "Well, I really didn't like him." But
because, you know, she was 15 at the time.
Yeah, well, it's a wonder she had her mother and her sister weren't cremated, because when they were having a battle in Newport and the buildings were burning and the cannonballs were exploding, Aunt Bet, her mother, and sister ran across the river bridge to get to the other side, and the bridge was on fire, and it's a wonder they weren't barbecued, because they were wearing all these petticoats, and they could have gone just poof and be gone.
Well, you know what? If they had been, there would have been a good vinegar-based sauce for them, because it was North Carolina.
And let me tell you, down there where I'm from, we have the best pulled pork in the whole state.
I bet you do. Now, the you know, where barbecue is concerned, Edward, it's North Carolina versus the rest of the world.
Yes, my cousin Myrna's husband, Larry, is the best barbecuer in my whole part of that country.
Now, do y'all pull it? You don't chop it?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. See, that's one of those articles of faith.
Well, I told my cousin Myrna, I think that's where that came from, was the Caribbean, because our family had plantations down there in the Caribbean, and came up there to North Carolina, and I think they brought that with them.
All right, let's really get something going here, Edward.
Okay.
Now, you're in Dallas.
Yeah.
You're no longer in North Carolina.
Right.
How does Texas barbecue stack up with the North Carolina stuff you grew up with?
Well, I sort of like the ribs.
How you feel about the brisket?
Well, it depends on where you go to get it. And I don't like a whole lot of sauce on stuff. I like the kind of sauce they use in North Carolina.
Yeah.
As a vinegar-based sauce. That's the kind I like. There's a wonderful restaurant in Kinston, North Carolina, called King's Barbecue. And I used to go up to Kinston with my granddaddy, because we'd go to Davis Mill to get water ground cornmeal. And we'd stop there and eat. And at that time, it was just a little restaurant with stools you sat on, and it was a filling station. Well, it's still a filling station, but they've expanded much beyond that. And if you want to contact them, you can call 1-800-OINK, I think it is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we just had a note in from Kate.
Oh.
And she said, "This is wonderful food porn. Ask Edward if he has ever written down accounts and stories about his wonderful, colorful kinfolk." And I'm sure she's saying by way of that you should, and I will give that an amen.
You want me to get sued, don't you?
Are you telling me your great aunt from 1850 is still around?
Let me tell you, they might just rise up. You never know. I have to watch, because I know a lot about the skeletons in the closets. I've sort of thought about that, but I've had other people mention that to me, and I say, "Yeah, you want me to get sued?" Or
well, I'll tell you what, you write it down. You write it down, put it under lock and key, and just send me the key, okay?
Okay, but see, then I'd have to worry with all the haints.
Well, yeah, you don't want to fool with them haints.
Absolutely not.
Because remember, you might go to videotape your haint and find some 28-year-old year-old woman having sex with a 16-year-old boy.
Oh my God! Well, now I
of course that only happens in Tasmania.
I don't think any of my relatives did that, but they had a good time. Let me tell you. And, you know, they They never had sex standing up.
Well, that's because somebody might walk by and think they were dancing, right?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, see, we come from a similar culture, Edward.
You all take care.
You have a good night, Edward.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Talking with you.
My pleasure.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah, see, it's already started. Email here responding to Edward calling from Dallas. Email here from Ron in Raleigh. Okay, see how it works? What you must understand, and this is the subject line of this email, is see how we can do all this really heavy, heavy, heavy lifting, and then the next thing you know, we're talking barbecue. Subject line, barbecue, B-A-R-B-E-Q-U-E, versus bar, B-A-R-B-Q-U-E. What you must understand, Bob, is that barbecue, B-A-R-B-E-Q-U-E, is the meat itself in North Carolina. Barbecue, B-A-R-B-Q-U-E, is what you do to the meat in Texas. Land sakes, we'll have a barbecue civil war going now. Because I haven't even got to the alley. I would honestly like to know. I'm sure there are treatises out there on the evolution of same, but I didn't grow up with a thin vinegar sauce, and I didn't grow up with a thick, gooey, sweet carbonizes on the grill sauce. It was somewhere in the middle, and that was Alabama. Now, I'll just say for the record that you cannot get decent barbecue in this state unless you happen to be a picnic that I'm throwing. There is a chain that has opened in Beckley recently, allegedly out of Dallas, called Dickie's, and they make a respectable rib and a decent brisket and some halfway decent pulled pork and some smoked sausage, and their chicken is the best chicken I've ever eaten in a restaurant anywhere. But it's a chain. We don't home grow barbecue here. There's another little outfit of independents, and they come up from Tennessee and Kentucky. But again, no homegrown barbecue here. No fried fish joints either, apart from Long John Silver's and Captain D's, and that could make a man come near crying. Because when you got a hankering for fried catfish, nothing else will do. And I generally have to wait until I go south, and then I start looking. A little place in Columbia called the Catfish Campus, Columbia, Tennessee. If you're ever going through Columbia, stop. For the love of God, stop. By the way, thanks to Kate. Kate dropped a note in a minute ago about asking Edward if he'd ever written down his family stories, and we both agree that he should, regardless of potential litigation or hanging. But I want to thank Kate for being the first to answer Waggy's challenge, Waggy answering Darlene's challenge this evening and putting it on the table. He saw it and raised it, so that leaves $110. To be met to catch up with Waggy's challenge, which would be nice if we could actually do that in the next 40 minutes or so. But if we can't, we'll keep at it tomorrow. But remember, we're trying to get out of a hole from April, and we're very near doing it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Who never had sex standing up?
Nobody in Edward's family.
Well, hell, they don't know what they've missed.
Well, no, you just don't want to be thought of. You don't do it for fear of being thought to be dancing if you're good and pious.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. It's often told on the Baptists, but
I learned it
on the Church of Christers that the.
Well, maybe they need to read an edition of the Kama Sutra.
It could possibly be, but the way the story goes is that the preacher and the church secretary were getting it on, and they suddenly noticed they were by a picture window, and the preacher hollered, "Quick, get down on the ground. Somebody's liable to think we're dancing."
Oh, my God.
See all the fun you missed in that Episcopal church, Jim?
I'm not going to even touch that.
Being all decent and civilized?
Yeah, absolutely. And not having to deal with all these
yahoos,
locomotions and and sounds and wailings and things of that nature. You know, I'm very proud of being one of God's frozen people.
The frozen chosen, absolutely.
And well, let me tell you something. The Episcopal Church does a hell of a lot of good for people.
I was just pointing out that.
But they do. I mean, you know, they aren't, in my opinion, they aren't like some of these other groups.
Well, how about stayed? Stayed is a good adjective.
Oh yeah.
Or perhaps they have a great deal of rectitude.
Well, it's just reverence to God. That's what it is, and reverence to the service, and an admonition to be, you know, to behave yourself in that sense. And that's all. It's just a matter of reverence and attempted effort to show some type of piety in your actions while in church. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right, as opposed to having the service break out into a tent revival snake handling ceremony.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is, you know, like I say, if that's your thing, fine, but it's not for me. Let me ask you something. You were going on the other night, and I couldn't quite catch it because of the buffering or something. You were going like wailing like a banshee or something, talking about hoodoos and haints and this, that, and the other.
Oh, yeah. That was prayer meeting Wednesday, I think.
I never quite understood that. What was that?
That's what I was telling Edward about. That was the fellow in Tasmania who was hearing all kind of hainting noises all around
his... Tasmania? Where in Tasmania? In Africa, or...?
A little south and perhaps slightly east of Australia.
Okay, Tasmania. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong continent.
That's okay. It happens to the best of us. I mean, George W. Bush didn't know the difference between Australia and Austria, so, you know, you're still way ahead of the curve, Jim.
Okay, now...
But he'd been hearing noises and supernatural seeming events. So he got up to go to work one morning and set his video camera up because he was gonna capture some genuine bona fide activity of paranormal behavior.
Okay.
And he expected to come home, you know, had a little infrared light on and everything because that's how they do it on the TV ghost hunter television programs.
Or they use those night vision goggles, that type of thing.
Right. And spectrographs and...
You know, uh-huh. Okay.
Frisbees and wheat checks.
Now.
But frisbees and wheat checks gets a now, Jim?
Go on with your story. Go on.
So he leaves and he comes back home and he goes to review his hainting tape. And it turns out it's his 28-year-old girlfriend having sex with his 16-year-old boy.
Who is making the noise, him or her?
Well, we just don't know that.
Well, I hope they enjoyed it.
Well, I figure they're probably both. It's probably both getting a little.
I mean, they could at least you know,
worked.
Put a sock in their mouth or whatever it is.
Well, I don't know if they were those kind of people now, Jim.
Oh, my Lord. That's what it was going on.
Tennis balls, duct tape, you never know.
And this guy really thought that he was being visited by...
Haints.
Some of the other side.
Mm-hmm. Spooks, spirits.
And it was basically the throes of passion coming from the next bedroom.
Yep. Right.
I just wonder what this man's IQ is. Because if you can't differentiate between...
Jim, wait, whoa.
If you can't differentiate between throes of passion and a good ghostly moan, you got some problems.
See, that's the problem. We've got people in this country with, you know, genius-level IQs who would be equally likely to set up the tape recorder for haints as they were to. I mean, this was the story the man told in court under oath.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that courtroom. And of course,
well, thank God, because I thought you were about to say you'd love to have been a fly on the wall in that kitchen.
Well, I mean, wherever. I mean, you know, I would have been a fly on. I would have been a fly on any wall around that to see what was going on, because God knows somebody has some good technique.
Amen.
I mean, you know, as long as you're gonna do it, you may as well enjoy it. And you know, it's good to be circumspect and keep your passion noise down to a low roar.
Now, see, that's the Episcopalian in you talking again.
I guess so. You just can't leave that alone. Well, that's okay.
Well, you're the one that dragged out circumspect.
Well, I did. That's true. But I mean, what was the outcome of the thing? I guess the guy's girlfriend.
She's yet up for sentencing, and her lawyer says that she acknowledges that this is a relationship that just can't go on. I presume she's talking about with the 16-year-old.
Well, I'm sure she probably taught that young man a lot of things that he could have learned at a later age. But you know, hey, things like that happen. You know.
Yeah, Kevin wants you to know via email that sometimes God works in mysterious ways and occasionally moans.
Okay. I'll just say okay, and. Going back to this congressman who doesn't like people to eat.
And well, felons. He doesn't want any felons eating.
Okay.
He's okay with poor people eating on $1.27 a day.
Okay, but yet he has a diaper fetish and likes for people to powder his bottom. Is that it?
Well, I'm not going to say that with any degree of authority. It is merely what has been reported among the professional sex workers of the greater New Orleans area.
Oh, my Lord. I have a friend in San Francisco who runs some type of service like that through MasterCard, and she does a lot of phone sex and stuff like that. She has one guy who comes over who likes to be diapered, but then he likes to put on a bonnet.
Okay.
And he cleans her house.
Ain't nobody getting hurt. I ain't got no problem.
No, it's kind of like that.
But again, you highlight the problem, Jim. And the problem is that at the same time one is out there hollering that marriage is a sacred bond between one man and one woman, and that you have family values, and that you want to make sure that you believe that God created Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve.
Well, there is a ring of hypocrisy to this.
Right. It's not about the particular peccadilloes.
No.
It is about the manifest hypocrisy that is involved with it all. And I guess he expects not just the evangelical Christians to forgive him, but for the rest of us too. And I am under no such ordinance.
Well, I understand that.
I wish him all the happiness in the world, and I wish he would go and have it outside the Senate and the government of the United States. Because apparently he has not learned any sort of lesson, as Kevin alluded to.
Well, apparently, you know. Well, I would agree with you. I wish he could.
I mean, those who have been forgiven. Are they not admonished to be equally forgiving in their own lives?
Yeah, they are. And also to not repeat to repeat whatever they're doing. And what I am referring to is not necessarily his sexual peccadilloes, but his attitude toward humanity, which is definitely
precisely
wanting and lacking when weighed in the balances.
Because despite all the art and beauty and genius of Dante's Inferno, there is nothing that suggests within that worldview, apart from the Catholic Church's fondness for defining mortal versus venial sins, there's nothing, and frankly, isn't adultery mortal or is that venial?
Adultery... Oh, Bob, I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I mean, I have heard certain Catholics tell me that not attending Mass when you can is a mortal sin.
Oh, so they're making it up on the fly. I thought this stuff was written down somewhere.
Yeah, it is, but I haven't looked at that in a long time, you know. And
the point that I was reaching for is that, especially within the more Protestant version of sin definition, sin is sin is sin, and to die unshriven is to die unforgiven, and to die unforgiven is to go and take a toasting.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he has in fact been forgiven within the boundaries of his faith, then his unwillingness to engage in that same sort of Christ-admonished forgiveness, I don't think forgiveness is a word, forgiveness for people who have served their debt to society for crimes that might not even constitute sin itself.
And to deny them food. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's where St. Peter's supposed to be putting on his kicking shoes, right?
Well, absolutely.
Straight down, straight.
And who is this guy? What's his name?
David Vitter.
Vitter, and he's a senator from Louisiana?
He is indeed. The junior one, I think.
I'm going to have to call his office tomorrow and ask him if their boss has a high chair in the office.
Oh, now, Jim, ask instead the legitimate question. Don't ask the one it'll get you hung up on. Ask the legitimate question. I'm told this man's a Christian and he wants to take food out of people's mouths. Who is he to judge whether or not an individual should be allowed to eat?
That is kind of cold-blooded. It really is.
It's reptilian. Especially when, as I tried to make clear, when you're not even necessarily punishing the individual former criminal, you're punishing his progeny, children.
You know, there's a punishment factor in the id of these people that makes them, you know, because they have certain sexual indiscretions that will make them compensate and absolutely be totally and completely.
Well, the phrase holier than thou was written for this guy.
Well, what I'm saying is which compensates and makes them totally insensitive to humanity. I mean, that runs throughout history. I mean, you'll find a lot of people who have a lot of sexual hang-ups and stuff like that who've done some pretty cruel things to people.
Well, from my personal standpoint, I don't believe in defining sexual hang-ups, because I remember the wise and trenchant words of Peter Godbold: normal is only a setting on a dryer.
I guess so.
Because when you set out to start defining what normal sexual activity is, if it is within the boundaries of consent, I don't care. A, none of my business, and B, the attempt to codify or to diagnose sexuality is something that should send the attemptor to the infirmary far sooner than the person being defined.
Well, yeah, but I was simply pointing out there is a definite correlation between certain fetishes that people have and their behavior toward other human beings outside the bedroom. That's what I'm trying to say. There's a definite correlation there.
Well, and if that's where you're taking it, then there's a problem.
I mean, for example, with Adolf Hitler. And what the Strasser brothers told William Langer about him and the type of relationship that Hitler had with his niece who shot herself. And I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah, just not
pretty
healthy.
Ugly. But nonetheless, I mean, you can just, I mean, there's a definite correlation between these types of activities and on the inside of the bedroom and on the outside. But away from that, you were talking about barbecue. I prefer, and I think they have good barbecue in South Carolina, and the best guy who ever made it was called Maurice Bessinger. Now, he's pretty much got a reputation of being a racist and stuff like that. But as far as barbecue is concerned, and it used to be available here, and because of certain things that were said about him and his racial views, it was taken off the shelves. You used to be able to buy it here. But it's mustard-based, and it's damn good.
Well, I grew up eating a, and I've talked about it before, that mustard-based hot slaw that was served with barbecue. It's the darndest stud. And I still pine away for it, Jim. I do. I mean, I can get close, and for those that have never had it, the recipe's pretty decent. But I can't get right there.
Well, Bob, you'll never have to worry about me ever coming in between you and fried catfish.
Not a fan.
I mean, you know, you may have your total and complete control of that whole aspect of the culinary, whatever. I will not ever stand in your way.
I'll see you over in the line for the shrimp and grits then, right?
No, not really. Not really. I have never really gotten into what grits is all about.
Mercy sakes.
I mean, I have eaten hominy.
Well, yeah, that's the whole kernel that's been exploded by
There's
soaking
big
in lime.
Big hominy and stuff like that, but as far as grits are concerned, I mean, they just sort of like, it's some type of liquefaction, and I just never got into it.
It's got to be done right, for starters. But then, have you eaten polenta?
Yeah.
It's grits.
Well, it's grits with a number of other things added to it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, as far as the plain southern grits and stuff like that, that all these people are enthusing about, you know, I just never, I mean, you know, more power to them, but like I said, they'll never have to worry about me trying to take their portion.
Oh, Lordy. Well, I'll be glad to have yours.
Well, you can have it. Certainly can. Yeah, absolutely. But nonetheless...
Well, I think in both instances I miss it so badly because there's none of it half decent available here.
Now, this whole area is too much a culinary wasteland.
It is, isn't it? I mean, and I hate to say that, but it is.
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, these people don't know how to cook, and what they cook is not.
Well, if Olive Garden is your idea of a top-notch night out, and if you would drive, and that's one of the things that just beats me. You can go by the Olive Garden in Beckley just about any time, day or night, and the parking lot will be full. When that's got about as much to do as with Italian cooking as me scrambling eggs has to do with high French cuisine.
Well, that's true too. I mean, these people.
And the same thing goes for Logan's Roadhouse. And the same thing goes for Texas Lone Star Steakhouse and the Outback. Now a Buffalo Wild Wings has opened, and its parking lot is full. Funny thing about driving past all these places, you look at it and you go, what recession?
Well, you know, I've heard they've had trouble hiring for places like that because a lot of their applicants can't pass the drug test.
There's a drug test for waiting tables now?
Yeah, I think so. That's what I was told by
merciful God.
Yeah, I was told that.
Well, it used to be that the restaurant food service industry was kind of a haven for the folks who were otherwise square pegs in social round holes.
Well, not in this case. I think in order to get any type of job because of the presence of drug usage, that there are a lot of businesses who are insisting that as a condition of employment that you pass the drug test.
Well, I can't imagine having to pass a drug test for a minimum wage job. Welcome to the economic wonderland that is America.
Well, you know, that's just that, and I believe that that's what I've heard. And as a final note, I did hear that woman who was going around talking about punching people in the face.
Well, did you happen to be listening to the local station when she said it?
No, but I've heard she's really a piece of work.
Well, just, you know, it just blows my mind that that's what passes for meaningful programming, whether it be Beckley, West Virginia, or anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess she's pretty much of a heavyweight on that station. I don't know where they pull her off, but I mean...
Satellite.
I kind of miss the old fool they replaced.
You never know what's gone until
you never miss your water till the well goes dry, but nonetheless, I mean, his statements were so outrageous in some of the stuff that people would say on his program.
New River flows north, or New River flows south, rather. Titanic plates, mercy sakes.
And helium in the tires to reduce wear on your tires.
I have yet to try that, but I hear it's true.
Well, anyway, enough said. But anyway, I was just wondering about the haints and stuff like that, and. Oh, my Lord in heaven, that guy just must be so woodenly stupid and stupidly wooden if he couldn't tell throes of ecstasy from...
I'm telling you, you are overestimating the brain power. No, you're not overestimating the brain power. You are overestimating the credulity, Jim, of millions and millions and millions of people around the globe. Remember, now that's Tasmania, and, of course, our Australian audience is still cringing over it. But you've got elderly men and women who are beaten to a pulp to death in Africa because they are accused of being witches. Okay, and that's before you even get to the United States.
Oh, I know. I mean, that's gone on throughout history. I mean, you know, look in Germany during the burning times, when you know, in one village they executed or burned within a certain short period of time 600 women. And a lot of this was designed because people wanted their property, and because they lived alone and weren't totally a mix of the community, they were victimized so their property could be seized.
Well, who was the colonial Massachusetts man who was pressed to death with heavy stones?
Oh, I don't know. They had 19 of them who were.
Yeah, his last words were "more weight."
Yeah, that's pretty horrible. But, you know, as far as the occult is concerned, occult means unknown, right?
Or dark.
Well, yeah, but...
As
far as visitations by ghosts and stuff like that are concerned, I'm not going to wax too eloquent on this, but I've had one or two experiences.
Well, look, I'm a charter member of the "There are more things in heaven and earth" Horatio than are dreamt of in your philosophies club, okay? But when there's a lot of hoodoo noises happening in your house, can we not look for the rational explanations first and rule out the rational?
I guess so. But it's very fashionable now to see a lot of people who are coming forth to explain their experiences with spirits and remember,
don't just say now, Jim, because it has been a persistent characteristic of American culture. Mrs. Lincoln had seances to find out what had happened to her little boys on the other side.
Well,
now, and 120 years later, Nancy Reagan is using taxpayer money to consult an occultist.
Yeah, Joan Quigley. I remember that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, more power to them, but nonetheless, there's a definite interest in that. And also, in closing, there is a reoccurrence of belief in exorcism.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember, I mean, since we were talking about Louisiana, David Vitter's state, Bobby Jindal, freely, openly, and confesses to participating in what would have been referred to under any other circumstances as an assault and battery on a young woman when he was in college, when they held her down and exorcised her. It's in his memoirs, for God's sakes. Bobby Jindal, governor, well, his real name is Piyush, he's never named Bobby, he's never changed his name. Piyush Jindal admits to being an amateur exorcist.
I guess he didn't even have a copy of the Roman ritual, right?
Oh, no. No, at best, see, you got to remember, he took his name Bobby because his favorite Brady was Bobby Brady. I'm guessing he was working maybe a few choice lines from, you know, from the movie, you know, from The Exorcist. You know, the power of Christ compels you, the power of Christ compels you, whatever. You know.
Well, I mean, there's a definite, I have a copy of the Roman ritual, and it's, you know, the Catholic Church used to hide that, basically, and was somewhat embarrassed by it. But now...
Less so, yeah.
I understand that they actually conduct workshops in the Vatican. I think it was under under Pope Benedict the 16th.
Well, that started when the guy, when Joseph Ratzinger was John Paul II's papal enforcer, his inquisitor.
Well,
and that's when it came back into vogue. You know, I like the way that Waggy talks about it in the chat room. He says, noises in the house here mean, in order of likelihood, rodents, marsupials, reptiles, weather, insects.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally birds. See, when you've got a list like that, it's going to take a while to get down to haints.
Oh, I understand that. And let me ask you something else while we're talking about this. If you have anybody else on hold, I don't want to take anybody else this time.
You're fine, you're fine.
But what do you think about Ouija boards?
I was strictly commanded never to get within in the same room as one as Little Baby Baptist because they were demonic.
Well, I had one and I put it on my door during Halloween, and it really got this lady who was a devout Catholic upset.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
And I told her, I said, I don't even have the planchette that goes with it. And that's the little thing that you put on your hand. I said, this is just something somebody gave me as a gag gift. But, you know, I would not.
But see, now, Jim, it's gone so much further. Ouija boards are passé. Now, in the modern era, you can get an app for your smartphone that is, and I kid you not, ghost radar.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
It can detect the presence of.
Yeah, it'll go around like a radar scope, and every now and then it'll blip, and a word will appear.
Oh my Lord!
So you don't even have to go to the trouble of spelling it out with a Ouija board anymore.
I guess this is symptomatic of the times in which we live, in which basically people are so confounded by things that they can't understand. Or, well, things that are being done to them that are wrong, and times that are just absolutely crazy. And, you know, and that's when people begin to turn to stuff like that as an escape from the reality of the world in which they live. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And Lottie in the chat room, of course, pointing out, he said, my mother threw out my Ouija board.
Well, probably a good thing, because, you know, I'm going to be laughed at, and I don't care. I've been laughed at before and ridiculed, but I wouldn't mess with one of those things either, because I don't want to pull in something from wherever that I can't get rid of. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I do. I think, if anything, what happens, though, Jim, is that, you know, I mean, there's such a thing as hypnosis. There's such a thing as self-hypnosis. And I think there is very definitely such a thing as the subconscious. I don't know if we want to go all into the Freudian business of egos, superegos, and ids.
That's okay, the parent, adult, child, that type thing. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but, I mean, it's just a matter of...
And I think there are probably more terrifying places to go inside the human spirit or human psyche than there are on the outside, with the previous Hamlet caveat applied. On the other hand... I mean, well, okay, here's my own little confessional. I tried acid. I said, I don't want to do acid anymore. My life is weird, and my regular life is weird enough as it is. It doesn't need enhanced.
Yeah, same here. Well, I had a one-time experience, and it was not...
Oh, I had more than one, but, you know.
Just one was enough for me. That was it, period.
And I have never touched mushrooms since the night that we did them sitting up on a Native American earthen pyramid in Tennessee. And I started having auditory hallucinations, hearing obviously not European language chanting in the woods.
Well, that psilocybin can definitely send you there.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and tell people that, you know, I don't know. I'm agnostic. Agnosis. I do not know.
I know there was a farmer. There were dairy farmers in below Columbia, South Carolina, who had actually, you know, and there were a lot of mushrooms that grew up there, and a lot of kids used to go out and hunt those mushrooms. And I wasn't with the group, but one group was literally almost driven off his property with a shotgun, with rounds being fired over their heads, because he knew what they were looking for. Because,
yeah,
you know, with the dairy farm and it's pretty fertile ground for the growth of different types of mushrooms.
Yeah, and you know, there's no telling.
Well, we all had differences of our life in periods of our life when we experimented with this, that, and the other, and it's good.
Lord, I remember somebody trying to one of the good old boys trying to talk me into trying what was it, morning glory seeds. I took a pass on that.
Oh, there was a whole pharmacopoeia of those things, Uncle Tom's MD8 or whatever, you know, and it. It just depended on what type of dealer you had and how much crystal meth and stuff was cut with, so that drive you absolutely crazy.
Mm.
But after having experience with that and having to take tranquilizers in order to have a ticket home from that experience, I decided, no more for me.
Yeah.
Now, ganja, that's a different story.
Yes, it's very much a different story.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, if you see that guy in the shower, elevator, wherever you're going, I mean, do these people live in the area of the same building where you guys are working?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole boatload of apartments there.
I mean, it would seem like a senator like that would have a nice place in Georgetown, or at least...
No, this is incredibly convenient. You walk out the door, you walk across the street, and you're in the Dirksen building.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I don't know. That's just really strange, meeting someone like that in the elevator, going down to a laundry room, and this guy is a senator of the United States. It seems like he would be able to afford on what he makes.
Oh, I'm sure that this is not cheap. Because it's some pretty prime real estate. I mean, it's right there on practically on the corner of First and Constitution. I mean,
yeah.
And if you happen to be a working senator and you don't want to fool with an automobile, there you go.
Well, it makes a lot of sense.
And plus, the place is empty as the tomb on the weekends.
So that's his little pied-à-terre when he's on duty in D.C.
Apparently so.
Okay, well, listen, it's been an interesting talk. Not a whole lot of great stuff being.
Well, I don't do the whole haint talk very often. So yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's good to get away from all the real problems and stuff that are confronting you to get off on this, whether it's talking about haints and stupid people who think that sexual cries of pleasure are ghostly moans, and also barbecue and other things. It's good to get off these.
Yeah, among other things, I'm damnably hungry now. To which, you know, these things happen.
Well, sadly,
the one little decent barbecue joint in Beckley, the chain joint, closes at 9, so I'm out of luck.
Bob, you're just going to have to get over there before your show and just load up and take a big plate of that barbecue. And
well, I'll tell you truthfully, they do. I'm not kidding. This little chain, and I'm not crazy about chains, but when somebody does something right, I'll talk about them. this little chain, Dickie's, that is allegedly out of Dallas, and I'm sure if I look on Facebook, I'll get a never heard of them from some barbecue aficionado in Dallas. They do the single best dadgum piece of chicken breast that I have ever tasted in my life. And it takes a lot for me to order something besides ribs or pulled pork or brisket or something like that. I order the chicken. So if the opportunity presents for you to have some of that chicken from Dickie's there in Beckley, I heartily encourage you to do so.
Well, chicken breasts are easy to fix. I mean, if you got a chicken breast at home, for example, if you just want to encase it in foil and put some Worcestershire sauce and just some garlic salt, you'll find you have a very nice thing to eat there.
Yeah, but I've also had some that were ruined. Well, you could half sole a shoe with it. But this stuff, these are big, fat, beautiful chicken breasts, and they are marinated in God knows what. And then they are hickory smoked, and they are as juicy and moist and wonderful. Oh, sitting here dropping. See, I'm doing it again.
Well, listen, I hope you can find something in your cupboard that will satisfy your appetite. And on that note, I will bid you good night.
All right, Jim, you have a good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim. And it is time to get out of here. We find ourselves $110 short of Waggy's challenge, but that's okay. He put it on the table for tomorrow, too. And it is much appreciated. Thank you to Darlene. Thank you to Waggy. Thank you to Kate. And anybody else who kicks in between now and tomorrow as well. It's just how we keep all this going. Thanks for a lovely conversation. Some heavyweight stuff and a little bit of fun stuff, too. That's what makes this all worthwhile, at least on this end. Thank you very kindly. And thank you, of course, for sharing your time and for sharing your ideas. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Texas Betsy's not there right now, but she is. Trust me. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. By all means, go to AICACT.org and help us end Appalachia's agony. I hope you'll tune in, by the way. Hope you'll tune in at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific for Dr. Bill O'Brien tomorrow, his Wednesday program. And always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And right now, the Rick Smith Show is on the way on the horn.